From the best-selling Heroes of History series, Emerald Books presents George Washington Carver, From Slave to Scientist, by Janet and Jeff Benj. Read for you by Tim Gregory. For information about other titles from this outstanding series that brings history to life, please visit ywampublishing.com or call 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Bushwhackers. A sickly baby lay in a rough-hewn wooden box beside the feeble fire. His name was George, and his mother, Mary, gently rubbed ointment into his chest in an effort to ease his congestion and lessen the effects of whooping cough. As she rubbed in the ointment, she sang quietly to Jim, her 2-year-old son, lying on a straw mat on the dirt floor trying to go to sleep. She had just finished a lullaby when the door to the tiny slave hut where she lived suddenly burst open. Mary jumped to her feet, panic-stricken at the terror she saw reflected in her master's eyes. "Bushwhackers!" screamed Moses Carver, Mary's owner, as he grabbed Jim from the floor. "Quickly, follow me!" 19-year-old Mary bent down and scooped up George. Pausing for a moment to arrange the thin blanket wrapped around him, his only protection against the cold night air that rushed through the doorway. It took less than 5 seconds to do, but it was 5 seconds Mary did not have. Before she could flee the hut, she heard the thunder of galloping horses in the yard and the whooping of men out for sport. She stood rooted to the dirt floor as a broad-shouldered man stumbled through the open doorway of the dimly lit hut.
"We got us one, boys,"
he yelled, waving his rifle jubilantly in the air. A cheer went up as 2 more men ran into the hut, grabbed Mary by her cotton blouse, and dragged her outside. Mary clung to George. Moses knelt silently behind a bush near the hut, holding Jim tightly against his chest so the boy would not see his mother being dragged across the yard. There was nothing he could do, though, to shield Jim from his mother's blood-curdling screams. Moses peered through the branches as Mary was thrown up onto a horse behind one of the bushwhackers. Mary kicked and bit for all she was worth, but the men hit her across the back and slapped her face until her protest was reduced to a quiet whimper.
"Let's go. We've got a lively young one here,"
laughed the man riding a chestnut mare.
"We better get her out of here before she starts fussing again."
The men who had dragged Mary from the hut mounted their horses, and with the click of reins, the 10 bushwhackers galloped off. Soon everything was silent except for the barking of the hounds tied up in the barn. Despite the silence, Moses stayed hidden behind the bush for several minutes as tears of frustration coursed down his cheeks. He wished he could have done something to help his young slave, but what? It was 1864, and this was southwestern Missouri, one of the most lawless places in all of North America. Tucked between Union, Kansas, and Confederate Arkansas, southwestern Missouri had become a bloody battleground. Sometimes Neosho, the seat of government for Newton County, where Moses Carver lived, was overrun by Confederates. And other times, Unionists had the upper hand and took over the town. Given all the confusion, if a person wanted to steal something and he could muster enough accomplices to help him, there was little anyone could do about it, especially if the crime was committed across state lines. All this had left the people of Diamond, like Moses Carver, in a difficult position. Diamond, Missouri, lay just 40 miles from the Arkansas border, and less than 20 miles from both Oklahoma and Kansas, making it the perfect raiding spot. In fact, Moses Carver's 240-acre farm had been attacked 3 times before by raiders or bushwhackers, as they were known, who came looking for Moses' stash of money. Being of German stock, though, Moses was far too stubborn to tell them where it was, though he had paid the price for his stubbornness. The bushwhackers had tied him up by his thumbs and dangled him from a walnut tree. When that did not work, they took red-hot coals from the fireplace and branded the bottoms of his feet. Still, Moses refused to talk, and he knew he was lucky they had not slit his throat before they left the farm in frustration. As a result of his treatment, he now walked with a slight limp, and his feet ached after only an hour or two of plowing. But the trade-off had seemed worth it to Moses. He might walk with a slight limp now, but the bushwhackers had left him alone. Until tonight.
"Where's Mama gone?"
Jim finally asked, pulling his head away from Moses' chest. "I don't know, Jim, but I think we can stop hiding now," he replied, taking the little boy's hand and leading him out from behind the bush. Moses and Jim emerged into a pool of light from the single lamp hanging in the window of the slave hut. As they did so, Susan, Moses' wife, who had been hiding behind the barn, crept around the corner to see what had happened to her husband and their slave and her two children.
"Oh, Moses,"
she gasped when she saw her husband, and seeing Jim at his side, she asked frantically,
"Did they take Mary?"
"Yes," her husband replied gloomily, "and little George."
At the news, Susan Carver burst into loud sobs.
"How could they? How could they be so cruel? Baby George is too weak to last a night in this cold, and Mary, dear sweet Mary, oh dear God, what will they do with her?"
she managed to ask between sobs. Moses had no answer for her. He knew that the Civil War, which still raged on, had caused some respectable white men to act very cruelly. He wished it could be all over and things could go back to the way they were before. But the war had been going on for 3 years and showed no sign of letting up. Not surprisingly, the Carvers got no sleep that night. Susan sat in her rocking chair holding Jim as he slept. And every time she looked over at Mary's spinning wheel, she felt more sobs beginning to rise in her chest. Meanwhile, Moses, his face ashen with concern, paced the living room floor, piecing together in his mind a plan to find and rescue Mary and, if he was still alive, which seemed unlikely, baby George. By the time the first rays of sun crept across the farm, it had been settled. Susan would stay in the house with the door firmly barred while her husband rode off in search of his neighbor, John Bentley. John Bentley was a Union scout, and he knew as much as anyone in the area about the movements of the bushwhackers and which particular group may have raided the Carver farm during the night. Indeed, he had heard rumors that a party of bushwhackers had been active in the area, and it made sense that they would raid the Carver farm since it was only a short ride across the state line, where they could get easy money selling a fit young slave like Mary. Eventually, Moses struck a bargain with John Bentley. If John could find Mary and steal her back, Moses would reward him with 40 acres of prime timberland and a racehorse named Pacer. Together they were worth $1,100, $400 more than Moses had paid for Mary when he bought her from a neighbor 6 years before. This deal seemed foolish to John. It was almost certain that the war would eventually end in favor of the Union Army, and such an outcome would lead to the freeing of all slaves. So why would Moses want to spend $1,100 rescuing her? For Moses, though, it was not about money. It was about loyalty. Even though the Carvers had bought Mary, they disagreed in principle with slavery and always sided with abolitionists. The approach of the war had created a shortage of young people to hire to work the land, and since the Carvers had been unable to produce any children of their own, they needed help on the farm. In desperation, they had purchased Mary. However, they had never treated her cruelly, and over the years, as they struggled through the trials of war together, they had become like family to one another. And now that Mary had been stolen, Moses knew he had to do all in his power to find her and bring her back. Over the next few days, Moses and Susan waited anxiously for some word from John Bentley. And while both of them knew it, they didn't want to admit to themselves or to each other that with each passing day, the chances of finding Mary grew slimmer. Finally, after 5 days, John galloped into the yard and hitched his horse to the post in front of the barn. Susan rushed out to greet him. Her face fell when she realized he was alone. Mary was not with him. John dipped his wide-brimmed hat. "Sorry, ma'am," he said. "I looked everywhere I could. I spent days following leads up hills and down valleys, but Mary is nowhere to be found." Susan brushed tears aside with her apron as Moses emerged from feeding the hogs. "No luck?" he asked grimly upon seeing his wife's tears. "Well, depends how you look at it," John replied, tugging at the leather belt that secured a cloth bundle to the back of his saddle. "Let's see what we've got here," he said, lifting the bundle down from his horse. Moses and Susan moved in closer to look, as with surprising gentleness John pulled back the layer of cloth.
"Lord be praised!" Susan exclaimed when she saw what was inside. "It's George!"
"More dead than alive, I'm afraid," John added, handing the bundle to Susan. "But I reckon you'd want the child back even without his mother. Maybe there's something you can do for him."
"How did you find him?"
Moses asked. "I was just a few miles inside Kansas making inquiries, when I heard about a scrawny little baby, black as coal, who'd been dropped off at a farmhouse by some raiders. I went to investigate, and they were only too happy to give the baby to me. They didn't think he had any chance of surviving. I took him, and every time I looked into the bundle, he was still breathing. In the end, I got some milk to feed him, and, well, here he is."
"But the farmer couldn't give you any idea about Mary?" Moses asked.
"Nope. They said they'd never seen the bushwhackers before." I found that hard to believe, but they were about as tight-lipped as folk can get. "I reckon I was lucky to get the baby back."
"Well, come in and have something to eat," offered Moses.
Susan was already inside unwrapping George and preparing a place for him beside the fire.
"He's hardly breathing," she said softly. "He was sick before they took him, and with the ride and the cold air, I'm not too sure he'll make it through another night."
"You never know," Moses said, resting his calloused hands on his wife's shoulders. "If anyone can bring back a baby from the dead, it's you."
Susan nodded.
"I'll do my best. When Mary comes back, I want to be able to tell her I did all I could for George."
She bit her lip to stop herself from crying as she spoke. When she had regained her composure, she turned her attention back to George. She had to save him. She had to nurse him back from the edge of death. She owed it to Mary.